From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Tensions remain high between the U.S. and Iran, with on-again, off-again incidents happening over the past few days. President Trump said that he had planned to hit three different sites in response to Iran taking down a U.S. drone, but after being told 150 people could have died in those attacks, changed his mind. Meanwhile, Iran denied reports that the president had sent warning about an imminent attack via a third party. For that and more, we spoke with international analyst Mark Sloboda via Skype from Moscow Friday. Mark, I'm glad you're back for this one. It's almost impossible to try to figure out what's going on. Did Trump warn the Iranians? Did he change his mind? He's saying now, you know, I got plenty of time and we don't need to be disproportionate. The Iranians are saying he didn't tell us nothing. And of course, the rest of the world is sitting with bated breath. Is there going to be a war or not?
We had a bit of a showdown with a kind of a letdown denouement, at least for the neocons, over the Strait of Hormuz between the United States and Iran within the last 48 hours. And, you know, this is a building story of tensions. Supposedly, there have been multiple attacks now on oil tankers and tankers containing petrochemical products passing through the Gulf of Oman, the Strait of Hormuz, which then exits into the Persian Gulf. Now, through the Strait of Hormuz, this is one of the world's most important and narrow waterways. It's some 30% of the world's seaborne oil passes through that strait every day. And at its narrowest, at the Strait of Hormuz, there with the Gulf of Oman, you've got Oman on one side and Iran on the other.
Yep.
And supposedly there in that area, there have been two separate occasions, some six targets now, of tankers that have had, in all cases, relatively minor damage done to them.
Yeah.
Now, the U.S. immediately has announced that in each one of those cases, without providing any evidence, certainly any credible evidence, in any case, that it was Iran, and that it was Iran putting mines on the sides of the ships, limpet mines, and that these caused these small explosions. They immediately blamed Iran. Iran immediately denied it, and it was used to further this tension with the U.S. sending more and more troops and equipment to the region in what seems an almost inevitable push to war. And one thing the American papers are all seeing, the U.S. may find itself in war with Iran, or, you know, the U.S. is being aggressive and is putting itself in a situation where war with Iran is the inevitable and deliberate intent, right? We can't get away with the press using these passive, as if the U.S. just fell into war with Iran. It just kind of happened. No, the U.S. government drove to war with Iran, right? With some very unplausible situations. Now, did Iran sabotage these tankers? Right. Okay. So first of all, none of the ships were sunk. No one was actually injured in any of these occasions, not even any cargo was lost.
Right.
And when you've got ships full of oil and petrochemical products like methanol and so on, that's probably pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. That's actually precision.
Yeah. Now, the U.S., in the last occasion, the last two tankers were both bound for Japan.
Right.
And the one of them was actually owned by a Japanese company, right. And that was the Kakuka Courageous, I believe, yeah. Something absurd name like that. Yeah. And the other one was a Norwegian-owned tanker, the Front Altair, that was crewed half by Russians, half right. by Filipinos, and was also right. bound for Japan.
Right.
Now, the attack occurred while the Japanese prime minister was in Tehran for a talk. So this right. was kind of a big deal because Japan, of course, is one of the major buyers of Iranian oil and other petrochemical products, you know, for industrial use. This is the first time that any Japanese prime minister had been in Iran since the Islamic Revolution.
Right, which is 40 years.
There, we can assume that they were talking about how Japan might continue to buy
right.
Iranian oil despite the U.S. sanctions, right? Which you know make it an extremely expensive proposition right. to try to go against the U.S. there and continue business as normal.
Right.
Supposedly, the Japanese prime minister also carried a message from Trump of some kind.
Right.
But the idea that Iran ordered attacks on Japanese-owned and Japanese-bound vessels, why that Iran did this while the Japanese prime minister is in Tehran? I mean,
right, ridiculous.
You would have to be there. You would believe they are in rabidly insane, right?
Right.
Which goes with the way most of
right.
the Western media, mainstream media and the government likes to present Iran.
That's right.
Right. You're left with the conclusion that it wasn't them, and then. The Pompeo's response, of course Iran did it. We don't need to show any evidence. Who else could have done it?
Right.
Well, I mean, I could think of a few occasions other than you.
Right.
Right? Let's leave out the U.S. for the minute.
Right.
Mr. We lie, cheat, and steal Pompeo.
Right, exactly.
Right. That has led, where false intelligence and lies have led the U.S. to war repeatedly, all through its history with false flags,
right.
starting with the Spanish-American War, the Maine, all the way through the Gulf of Tonkin, weapons of mass destruction in
right.
Iraq, genocide in Libya, moderate rebels in Syria. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's not
right.
it's not conspiracy theory. It is historical fact, right?
Right.
So, certainly the burden of proof, of quite significant proof, is on the United States.
Yeah, you'd think. Yep.
So in the days after the aftermath of these two tankers being struck, and it has to be said that particularly the Japanese vessel, although the U.S. version, and they say they have a video of Iran, of an Iranian boat removing something from the side of the what they say is removing something from the side of the ship. That's not actually clear from the video.
Right.
But hours after the attacks, and they say that's proof that Iran did it. Well, Iran was – no one is denying that Iran was involved in rescue operations with these ships. They helped, gain control of the ships, rescue the crew,
right.
and so on. So that's certainly not proof of anything. And the Japanese crew say that their ship was actually struck by something flying. By something above the waterline
right.
that they
torpedo.
Saw strike
right.
the side of the ship, i.e., not a mine,
right?
Right, i.e., a missile, i.e., a drone, all right, something of the sort. The U.S. won't even discuss that, and it's rather remarkable that the sailors on this Japanese ship are saying that's what we saw, and. Everyone in the U.S. mainstream media and government is just completely ignoring that.
And nobody raises a question like when a day later Iran shoots down a U.S. drone right in that neighborhood.
Yeah. This is right in that neighborhood again. This is a very restricted space, right? Just a couple days later, a U.S. unmanned drone This is a Navy variant of RQ-4 Global Hawk. Technically, it's a MQ-4C Triton, right? This is a surveillance, a large surveillance drone. You know, it's not like your little backyard drones or drones used for media or something. This is something very near the size of a jet fighter itself.
Right, it's big.
Yeah, and it's packed full of electronic equipment. It's supposed to be state of the art. It's also a prototype of the new Navy variant of the Global Hawk. It's kind of unique in some ways, at least at the moment. Had all kinds of new equipment on board. At the minimum cost, the U.S. taxpayer just lost around $250 million.
Whoa.
That's minimal. Now, the U.S. says that it was in international airspace when this happened. Okay? Although there's no question that U.S. drones and military aircraft are all up and down the Iranian border there in the Strait of Hormuz now. They're getting all up in the Iranians' face, you know, on the other side of the world from the United States.
Right.
You know, in what is obviously being staged is a deliberate attempt to provoke war, to provoke conflict. And this isn't Saudi Arabia's vessels there, right? It's not the United Arab Emirates. It's not Oman's. It's not any of the coastal literates. It's the U.S. from the other side of the world that is getting up in Iran's face.
And it's not in Long Island Sound either. This is Iran's border.
Now, if we have any question about who's been provoking these tanker attacks, other than, you know, who is it possible that Iran did it? It is. I find it unlikely, considering Russian crude vessels bound for Japan while the Japanese prime minister is there.
Much better targets.
The Norwegian vessel was actually of a company that continues to do business with Iran despite the sanctions as well. So that would be like attacking one of the few companies that is willing to still transport Iranian oil.
And making them get their insurance canceled.
Yes. It's just, I find all that remarkable. I mean, who else is possible? The U.S., of course, is possible. But so are Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, all who have, you know, part of the same axe to grind against Iran there and would very much like to see the U.S. go to war with Iran. In fact, the Israeli government has already released, as a result of this denouement where the U.S. didn't attack, that their biggest fear is that the U.S. will not respond forcefully enough to Iran, which just happened, evidently.
Right.
So this drone was shot down. Again, the Americans say it was international airspace. Iran says it was their national airspace over the Strait of Hormuz there.
Right.
You know, it was evidently shot down with 1970s surface-to-air missile. It's not exactly, super modern Russian S-4 or 500 or anything. Right. It was pretty, old tech. Here's the thing. If you take an actual look at the maritime boundaries involved, international airspace is essentially non-existent at that point in the Strait of Hormuz. The borders between the borders between Iran and Oman is so tight there that I don't know if there is a singular path with a couple meters to spare that this drone could have flown along, a flight path it could have followed to not at some point violate Iranian airspace. I think it's pretty safe to assume that it probably did, that it's pretty hard actually to maneuver there without doing it, even if it was not intentional, which I don't believe in the slightest. So this was shot down, and then immediately, you know, the war hawks in the U.S. started, you know, oh, we're going to bomb Iran, right? That's it, right? And we got what we wanted. So the story goes, bits and pieces of it coming out. Supposedly, Iran is now saying is that there was a U.S. military aircraft. They haven't really, there's no response of what type or anything like that. Probably also a reconnaissance aircraft.
Well, now they're saying a P-8.
A P-8. Okay. So that's a standard Navy surveillance with some 30 Navy sailors aboard that Iran specifically did not hit, even though they said it was accompanying the drone, right? And that was their idea of a proportional response. We'll shoot down your unmanned drone. Right. And, you know, I mean, that is, of course, drone cruelty, and we must all weep for the children of the drone, you know, somewhere, the victims, right?
Right, yeah, right, baby drones.
The Onion has a wonderful piece out about how Pompeo is saying that this drone was just in the area going off to church on Sunday when Iran out of the blue came up and attacked it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it shows the ridiculousness of the absurdity of the situation here. The Onion's been quite good at that.
Yeah, lately. This week. Yep. Yeah, they've had a lot to work with. You have to hand them that, too, though.
So. One thing everyone, at least the story is that Trump ordered, was given options, and he ordered a plan for a limited strike on Iran that would include several radar stations and anti-aircraft and missile defense batteries. And then some time went by before the assault, supposedly, according to Trump's quite unhinged tweet that we got. Let me see if I can.
I got it right here. He says, "On Monday, they shot down an unmanned drone flying in international waters. We were cocked and loaded to retaliate last night on three different sites when I asked, how many will die? 150 people, sir, was the answer from a general. 10 minutes from the strike, from before the strike, I stopped it. Not, and then the next tweet, not proportionate to shooting down an unmanned drone. I am in no hurry. Our military is rebuilt, new, and ready to go, by far the best in the world. Sanctions are biting and more added last night. Iran can never have nuclear weapons, not against the USA, not against the world." So there, he's pointing still to this nuclear weapons issue rather than anything else between the U.S. and Iran. And so he can back off all of this and come up with a revised JCPOA and look like a champ to his constituents.
And let's take a look at the two tweets that preceded that as well.
Go ahead. President
Obama made a desperate and terrible deal with Iran. Well, it certainly was terrible for Iran because it was blackmail over something they didn't have.
They didn't get most of the relief either that they were supposed to get.
Gave them $150 billion plus $1.8 billion in cash. That was their own money. That was frozen in the United States.
Right.
It's not like they handed them free money, right? It was Iranian assets in the United States that the U.S. illegally seized.
Right.
All right. Iran was in big trouble, and he bailed them out. No, not really.
Not exactly.
Gave them a free path to nuclear weapons. What? That is completely false. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the inspectors, European countries, everyone agrees, including U.S. experts, that Iran was completely fulfilling the terms of this nuclear deal, backed up by a UN Security Council resolution that was forced on them. That they never had a nuclear program to build a nuclear weapon in the process. What it actually did was restricted their ability to highly enrich uranium, right?
Right.
Which the whole goal is to prevent a breakout path where they don't have a nuclear weapons program, but they have highly enriched uranium such that in a very short period of time, like 2 to 5 years or something like that, if they actually began a weapons program, they could then build it. Actually went one step further and prevented them from, deal from even highly enriching uranium, not as part of what all the experts agree a real nuclear weapons program looks like, which they didn't have.
Right.
So gave them free path to nuclear weapons. Completely false. And soon. False.
Right.
Instead of saying, thank you, Iran yelled death to America. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, some people on the Iranian street, you know, after, you know, this whole incidents, you know, in the 1970, the 1960s, 70s, when the U.S. installed the Shah in Iran, overthrew their socialist government, right, you know, and so on. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad feelings towards the U.S. and Iran. At the same time, we had John McCain in the U.S. Singing bomb, 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 bomb Iran, right? Okay, right. So we all agree that there's hotheads on both sides. I terminated the deal, yes, which was not even ratified by Congress. Well, that was right. – it was never intended to be. It was something that was actually put through with a UN Security Council resolution,
right.
Something a little bit of a higher authority, under international law than the U.S. Congress agreeing to
and,
it. Right?
And the ability to do that has already been through the U.S. Congress when they ratified the UN Charter.
Charter, yeah. And imposed strong sanctions. Yes, you imposed many illegal, unilateral sanctions with the stated ability to starve the Iranian people. I mean, there's literally Pompeo outright said, if they want to feed their people, they will change their policy. I mean, that was the intent, to make right. the Iranian economy scream.
Right.
They are a much weakened nation today. Well, they're getting there. The economic effects are now starting to be felt. That at the beginning of my presidency, well, okay, yeah, I mean, they're starting to get there when they were causing major problems throughout the Middle East. Well, I mean, that's a matter of perspective, of course. Even the U.S. government admits that Iranian-backed popular mobilization units, Shia militia, were instrumental to beating ISIS in both Iraq and Syria. That seems like they were solving major problems that were created by the
exactly.
U.S. in Iraq and Syria. Now they are bust. Okay, so you know this is the mentality of the man going into it, right? Iran can never have nuclear weapons. Well, that's really interesting because they don't actually have a nuclear weapons program anyway.
Right.
And no matter how many times you and people in the mainstream media say that, it won't be true.
Right. Exactly. They can't drop reports of nuclear right. weapons on their neighbors.
The nuclear inspectors, all the experts in the world agree.
Right.
They have a civilian nuclear energy program with
right.
reactors actually built by Russia,
right.
And which they're allowed to do. I mean, and,
right.
and the U.S. certainly doesn't have any right to tell them they're not.
Right.
And this weapons of mass destruction excuse. You know, nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, bioweapons labs. It's always pulled out when the U.S. wants to attack somebody.
Right.
And there's the military is the U.S. military is rebuilt. Was it ever not been rebuilt? It's been on a stiff upward military spending, for like the last 6 years now.
Since 1789, right? Actually.
Well, no, I mean, in the first few years of Obama's presidency, there was a slight dip in spending, but then that reversed itself and it actually went up.
Well, they had to give all
the end of his presidency.
Those first 2 years, they had to give every dime they could reach to the banks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, when they bailed out too big to fail.
Right, exactly.
U.S. financial institutions yeah. that are now being used as weapons against Iran.
Yeah.
All right. I believe that the U.S. president was presented with military options to strike Iran. Did he actually at any point actually give permission as the story is going to hit those targets? We don't know. We don't know. This happened before in the U.S. During the Nixon presidency, where an elaborate fiction was created that the U.S. was poised to strike, but then didn't. This was the intent of making it look like things came down to the line and that the U.S. president was being magnanimous by not attacking.
Right.
All right. That's possible. It's possible it really happened, too. This 150 people, well, certainly no, it's not proportionate to a U.S. drone unless you don't believe that Iranian lives aren't worth anything. right? But he would have had at least a preliminary assessment. Of how many lives would be cost, during the initial briefing of the possibilities. And then he might have gotten a final, closer estimate, in the final moments before, the red line to order the strike, and supposedly 10 minutes before he called it off. It's possible it happened that way.
Right.
One thing we can tell for sure is that the president has surrounded himself by people, that are neoconservatives and war hawks and are pushing and are very, very hot for war with Iran.
Right.
Bolton, the first and foremost of those, and there's a very good piece out this week in the American Conservative. There are many good pieces this week out Conservative, which is amazingly, despite, the name conservative, don't let you fool you. They are the single best foreign policy, if you're critical of foreign wars, regime right. changes, military expenditure, the single best. Unfortunately, there's nothing on the left that even comes close.
I would say anti-war is the single best anti-war platform, along with Tucker Carlson's program on Fox in the whole country.
Yeah, I mean antiwar.com, site which puts out little blurbs and everything.
Yeah.
But if American conservative is continuously, regularly, daily putting out intelligent, their own pieces, well thought through, by realists like Daniel Larison, and others that are excellent on as a critique of U.S. foreign policy and militarism. So anyway, there's a piece out in the American Conservative about how John Bolton is, basically flooding. He's revamping the makeup of the National Security Council and flooding it with neocon loyalists to himself, right? That will of course push exactly the war button lines that he wants. We know Pompeo, right? The man is no surprise to us. And the other one, evidently, who was big pushing this, according to the media, is bloody Gina Haspel, the director of the CIA, who herself was a hands-on torturer in a CIA black rendition site. During the George W. Bush presidency and into the beginning of the Obama presidency, and it's anytime the U.S. even tries to open its mouth and speak about morality and abuse about any other country in the world, you just have to point out, your own director of the CIA is a hands-on torturer,
exactly.
For Christ's sake. Bloody Gina Haspel.
Yep.
That's what they call her in the CIA.
Right, as a term of affection.
certainly by some, but I do believe there's some people in the CIA that probably, even there, that don't think that torture is necessarily, a great principle for the U.S. To follow foreign policy and security wise.
Right. Bad PR.
So evidently, these three were pushing for war, and there's conflicting accounts. I found the most credible being that U.S. generals warned Trump in the face of this unholy three of Bolton, Pompeo, and bloody Gina Haspel pushing for strikes. I found the most credible account, although there are conflicting accounts, that the generals basically told Trump that there is no such thing as a limited strike against Iran. If you launch strikes against Iran, it will mean full-scale war. Yeah. And it won't just mean war with Iran, it will mean war across the Middle East, from Palestine and Lebanon all the way through Syria and Yemen, through Iraq, Iran, and into Afghanistan next door, which already has U.S. troops, but also has, some forces there that are supported by Iran as well, fighting the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. We got to stop here, but I just want to, point out that the area you just named, for example, as a practical matter, on battle lines across parts of Syria, the U.S. faces on the other side Russia, Iran and Syria, which means that when they start shooting at each other, the risk of this going from a war between the U.S. and Iran to a full-scale thermonuclear war is actually a material risk that has to be considered. Mark, we'll maybe pick up on what happens in the intervening period next week when we do our update. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.